Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. We've all heard about this nation's use of drone military aircraft in war zones on the other side of the world. The aircraft are guided by pilots thousands of miles away. Targets are also identified long distance. There is a film soon to be seen on the Nine Network here that takes a look at some of the people involved in the drone program and how it has affected them. The film is National Bird. Its producer-director is Sonia Kennebec. I asked her in an interview yesterday how she came to such a project.
It actually started with curiosity. I wanted to find out more about the drone program. When I started my research in early 2013, there wasn't a lot of information out there. There was commentary by journalists and pundits, but there was not a lot of information from the inside, and that was my goal with the film. I wanted to speak to the people directly impacted by the drone war, the ones in the drone program, but also the people in the target countries.
What were you seeing that caused this interest to get you started on it?
Well, I read commentary in the papers, and you know, people were discussing the use of drones, and it sounded so surreal, you know, a little bit like science fiction, that these types of weapons are, you know, being used, unmanned aircraft. And I really wanted to know more about it. And one of the pieces of information for me didn't really match up. It was the count of civilian casualties. In early 2013, I think, you know, they were only talking about single-digit civilian casualties. And to me, it didn't seem realistic, especially considering the fact that drones were being used at that time already pretty heavily.
Yeah, at one point during the film, one of your characters, if I may put it that way, reads a citation in which she points out that she had identified 200,000 targets, whatever it was, 200,000 targets.
Yes, one of the characters in my film, one of my lead characters, she actually served in the military for over 20 years. Her name is Lisa. Her last deployment was in the drone program. And at the end of her work there, she received a commendation medal from the Air Force. And on that medal, it says that she participated in identifying 121,000 insurgent targets. And that number is incredibly high.
Well, it certainly justifies your concern about the numbers that you were seeing when you got started on this project. For the sake of clarity, can you capsulize each of the three main characters in your film for us, who they are and their stories?
Yes, my documentary is what is called a character-driven documentary. So I am following the stories, the journeys of my three lead characters. All three of them, you know, served in the military. They are veterans now. And the first person who's the first person that I'm introducing in a film, but she's also the first person who I found in my research, is Heather. When I was filming her, she was in her mid-20s, and she enlisted as an imagery analyst, meaning that her job within the drone program was to analyze the live video feed coming from the drones and basically make the call, you know, this person is carrying a weapon or this person is carrying a shovel, this person is a terrorist or this person is a civilian. So that's a very far-reaching decision that she had to make. And so that's kind of her story in the film. She really is struggling. She has, you know, nightmares and trauma. And she was actually, while she was on a job, she was on a suicide watch list. And so her journey in the film is trying to get help and trying to get support, psychological help, which was really not easy. Yeah, that's kind of her journey in the film. The second protagonist is Daniel. He was a signals intelligence analyst. Signals intelligence means that, you know, you are basically working with the technology on the drone, you know, tracking down targets and people. And he actually, during the production of the film, or when we started, he actually still had top secret clearance and worked as a contractor. And then, you know, there's actually some, you know, he's also at the same time, he's a peace activist. He goes to protests, and then there's some government backlash. And the third person in my film is Lisa, and she served for over 20 years in the U.S. military, and her last deployment was in a drone program, and she worked on this big surveillance system behind the drones, and from the U.S., from California. And so what she wants to find out during the course of the film is she wants to understand and, you know, really kind of understand what the drones do on the ground. So she travels to Afghanistan, and we travel with her to understand, you know, how people perceive the drones in these countries targeted by drones.
She says at one point in the film that she lost her humanity in doing this job. I mean, that's how deeply it affected her. Of course, all were affected by it. Let's go back to Heather for a moment. She was obviously making life or death decisions.
Yes.
How long did it take her before it really began to get to her?
I can't tell, you know, exactly, or if it, I think it's for her even hard to say sort of what was the real turning point. I think it was a development. So she actually enlisted into the drone program. She talks in the film about it. When she was in a recruiter's office, she saw the posters with the drones, and she thought, wow, you know, that's really cool. It's really mm-hmm. badass. Mm-hmm. And yes, when you watch the commercials, you know, the Air Force commercials about the drones, it looks like a video game. It's all very mm-hmm. highly produced and made for a very young audience. And so she really knew, you know, what she wanted to, you know, work in. And she, you know, she knew she would, you know, be part of the drone program. But then when she was in the program, kind of going on, you know, really having access to all this, you know, secret information, you know, people in my film, they all had top secret clearances. So you don't really know what the work will be and what you're getting into until you're actually part of this secret environment. And so, and I think one of the things that really, you know, really made her realize that it's these are real people and these are decisions over life and death is when, you know, first she had to, you know, before a bomb is being dropped, you know, sometimes these drones would, you know, would observe people for, you know, days. So you would get to know them and, you know, follow their daily lives. And then when, you know, the decision was being made to, you know, to drop a bomb, then afterwards the drone would continue to loiter. And it was Heather's job to, you know, count the body parts, to, you know, also watch and observe how family members come and, you know, pick up the body parts and bury them. So it was all, you know, very graphic.
Day after day, she would have to do this. Was she actually located near the battle zone itself, or how far away was she?
Very far away, basically halfway across the world. Yeah. So like Lisa, Heather was also in the U.S., stationed in the U.S.
So you would work all day doing this sort of thing, then go home at night or go back to the barracks or whatever, just like a regular work day.
Yes, and I think that's also, you know, part of where, you know, some of the trauma comes from this. And I really want to, you know, clarify that it's no one is comparing the experience of people in the drone program to, you know, soldiers who are on a battlefield and, you know, who are in combat. These are very different experiences. But what people, you know, who work in the drone program often struggle with is that they are fighting a war. They are in, you know, they are killing people. You know, doing 12-hour shifts on and off and participating, you know, being part of a war. But then when it's done, you know, when their shift is done, they go home, mm-hmm. they leave this secret environment, they go home to their families, to their kids, but they can't talk about any of their experiences. So I think a lot of that is also very schizophrenic. And Lisa, you know, talks about it, that it's, you know, you would then, you know, you would fight a war, you would kill people, and then you go to a Starbucks and people are just talking about the Kardashians and TV shows. And it's very difficult to handle.
I can understand why the military would want to give this a top secret classification up to a point. Clearly, they don't want their secrets out as to exactly what they're up to. But it also kind of suggests to me that the military realized that what it was doing was immoral, perhaps. Choose the word. I mean, that it was wrong. Do you get that impression, that they felt that, they realized that?
Well, this, you know, there are a lot of problems with this weapon and the way that it is being used. You know, there are many people who say that, you know, it's not really covered by international law, you know, rules and regulations. And I really think this is one of the times where, you know, technology has outpaced our rules and regulations, to a certain extent, maybe even our moral standards. And it's really up on us to catch up. And I think, you know, in order to do that, we need more information. We have to understand, you know, how many people are being killed, how many of these people are being civilians, to even judge the efficiency of this weapon, if it's really, you know, as safe as people say.
You certainly hope that that's something your film will help accomplish, is make people understand what the heck is going on out there.
Yeah, that was really my goal, to, you know, bring more transparency into the program, you know, show how it affects people. This is a film really about humans and how, you know, the people who work in the program, but also the people in the target countries, you know, how it affects them. I'm hoping to start a discussion.
One of the interesting aspects of Heather's story, particularly from your point of view as a filmmaker, is the fact that she came out of this suffering from PTSD, and that this is something, even though you are half a world away and not physically fighting, that you can come away with serious wounds yourself.
Yes, and I think that's a really important part to understand and acknowledge. And, you know, yes, people, you know, might say, you know, oh, you know, people like Heather are not in immediate danger, which is true. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not in immediate physical danger, but it still affects them. And so when I first met Heather, she actually told me that she had lost 3 of her friends, you know, fellow airmen, to suicide. So it is real. You know, people are hurting and they need help and support. And Heather herself, she was, you know, on a suicide watch list, and they still didn't take her off of her job. And Lisa, the other subject in my film, she actually said for her, she was deployed in combat zones, you know, as part of her career in the military. And so she can compare. And she said for her, you know, working in a drone program was affecting her more because you are actually not in immediate danger. You're killing, but you're never defending yourself. And that's something where, you know, she really was struggling with. And there's a new term people are talking about more in psychology. It's called moral injury. And I think that's a term that might better describe what people, you know, struggle with in the drone program.
I want to talk a little bit more about Lisa. We'll do that in a moment. We have to take a break. I'm talking with Sonia Kennebec, who is the producer and director of the film National Bird. And we'll give you more information on that a little later in the program. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. And we're back talking with Sonia Kennebec, and we're talking about her film National Bird. Sonia, the character Lisa, we just talked about her before the break, but she really was kind of overwhelmed by guilt, wasn't she, in the sense that she felt that she had to give back somehow. She had reparations of some sort or another. Tell us what she felt she had to do.
Yes, I think you're describing it really well. Yes, you know, she's feeling a lot of guilt, and she says in the film she wants to give back. And what she does during the course of the film is she flies to Afghanistan with an old friend of hers who lives with her in the Bay Area and in the U.S., kind of close by, a neighbor. But this neighbor, she's originally from Afghanistan. So these two women, they fly over together to Afghanistan, and Lisa really wants to understand how drones are affecting the people on the ground, because she was so far away from, you know, where the war is being fought. Mm-hmm. And so she, with her friend together, Asma, then meets the victims and the survivors of a drone strike gone wrong. And so Lisa, through a friend, Asma, is really sort of understanding more about the culture and in places like Afghanistan and how people are perceiving drones. And what was really interesting, you know, for myself, for me too, is that people in Afghanistan, but also many of the other countries, target countries, is that they know a lot about the technology. Often I have the feeling more than people over here. They understand very well, you know, how large these drones are, you know, the sounds of the drones, where, you know, the drones can watch you day and night. And it creates a lot of fear and anxiety. And we've heard that, you know, some children are afraid to play outside and leave their houses because they're afraid of the sky.
We should point out here that when we're talking about drones, the image that people listening to this might have is what we're seeing become increasingly popular in this country. They're basically toys. The drones that you're talking about, much larger, obviously, equipped to carry some very deadly weaponry. Give us some sense of the size proportion.
Yeah. So that's what I've also, you know, talked about to people at our screenings, that a lot of people come in and they are used to these, you know, small little plastic toy drones, and it comes a bit as a surprise to see how large these military drones are. And, you know, that's what my film is about. It's about armed military, you know, combat drones. And they are more like, you know, real, you know, aircraft. So some of these drones have a wingspan of 66 feet. They carry, you know, real bombs, you know, Hellfire missiles and, you know, JDAM bombs. You know, some, you know, of them are 300-pound bombs. So that's, you know, just to give you a bit of a sense of, you know, how these drones look like.
And they're here to stay. You talk about technology moving more quickly than perhaps the morality of using this kind of weaponry. And we're not the only ones that have them.
Exactly.
What have you found out about that?
Well, so this film is mainly about the U.S. drone program, because the U.S. has been kind of the country that has, you know, started to use drones in this way very early on, and flying them into many different countries, you know, not just in Afghanistan and in Iraq, but there's also, you know, the CIA had been using drones in places like, you know, Somalia and Yemen and Pakistan. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So, and that is really, you know, no other country has been using drones, you know, to this extent. But it is, you know, like all weapons, this technology proliferates, and it's not a very complicated technology. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, Israel has been, you know, developing and using, you know, military drones. You know, China has drones, Iran. And then there's also, you know, I've been recently reading reports about organizations like, you know, IS basically arming, you know, certain consumer drones, you know, making, turning them into weapons. So it's like all technologies, they're always going to come back.
You know, if you're really a pessimist, and maybe not even necessarily a full-fledged pessimist, you could envision a day when they could be used against us by ISIS or by anybody who happens to be an adversary. No reason why they couldn't be.
Exactly. No. Yeah. And I think that's, you know, why we need to have a discussion on a global level. It's a global weapon. And I think, you know, because it's crossing, you know, nation lines, borders, you know, we have to internationally, yeah. I think there needs to be, you know, discussion about rules and regulations and laws.
As you point out in the film, the drones don't recognize borders. They don't even see them.
Yes.
And that's precisely what you're saying. Mm-hmm. Do you have any sense that this discussion has begun anywhere, that there is either internally in this country or perhaps internationally discussion about the authorized use of drones in warfare?
There is discussion. I don't think it is yet where it should be, you know, where it's really, you know, at the point of really formulating, you know, like changing international laws, because I think one of the issues is this is whole secrecy. I have seen in the years of my production, I've seen a development there, that whenever, you know, journalists have been, you know, uncovering, you know, more information, or, you know, my film is coming out and we have, you know, three veterans from a drone program, you know, talking about, you know, what they have been through and what they have been experiencing, you always see sort of a reaction that, you know, the government, you know, feels that, you know, there has to be more information being released. And I think that's really the first step to create more transparency. And yes, you know, the numbers that the government has been releasing about, you know, civilian casualties is way lower than a lot of, you know, non-governmental organizations that have been in the field and have been interviewing people and counting civilian casualties.
You have some clips of President Obama talking about the drone program and kind of fudging a little bit with his language as to how extensive the fatalities have been, for instance. I mean, they're all very careful about the way they talk about this.
Yeah, there's a reason he says near certainty.
Yeah.
And yeah, you can absolutely see there's a lot of care and a lot of secrecy. And I think that's something that should concern us. I absolutely understand the need for secrecy, you know, in war. And, you know, you have to keep, you know, technology secret, troop movements, all of that. Mm. But, you know, in terms of casualty counts and civilian casualty counts, I think this is information that the public should know.
There are some rules to this particular effort, the drone effort, and that is that the children under the age of 16 are not to be targeted, that sort of thing. What kind of rules are there, and are they abided by?
Well, this is a really, you know, tough question because there is so little information out there. Yes, you know, there's a term, and it has been controversial in itself, you know, military age male. And throughout some of the cases that I've looked at, you know, especially in the one that is in a film where I interviewed the victims and survivors of a strike gone wrong, afterwards, after that strike, there was a military investigation, which is very important, I think, you know, to really understand, you know, what led to the fact that, you know, many civilians were killed, including children. And it turned out that, you know, during that strike, some of the people involved in the strike weren't even, you know, sure of what, you know, what military age means. You know, is it a 16-year-old, 13-year-old, 18-year-old? So not everyone was completely clear about that. And then the CIA has, you know, different rules of engagement, and that we don't, you know, we don't have a lot of information about that. The military, I think there's more transparency with military strikes, and then you have like also what, and that's what Daniel was working on, high value targets. And when you want to get a high value target, you know, civilian casualties or, you know, are accepted to a certain extent. So you have many different strikes with like different rules and regulations, but I think there is a big lack of transparency. I would actually like to get more information about that.
You have a lot of footage, of actual raw footage of drone strikes, and also some exchanges between the airmen who are basically dealing with the operation. And as I recall, they were talking about a 13-year-old is just a 13-year-old, but if he has a weapon, he's a combatant. And the debate is, therefore, shouldn't that 13-year-old be part of the targeting operation?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Or, you know, they're asking, oh, are these teenagers or toddlers? And so, yes, I have in my film, so I speak to the victims and survivors of a strike, and there was a military investigation. And so as part of this military investigation, there was a whole file that was released through a Freedom of Information Act request, and it includes the transcript of the pilot and his, you know, sensor operator, the co-pilot, during the strike. And it's 80 pages, I think it was about 80 pages. And throughout, you know, these hours when they are watching these families and they think they are a threat and these are terrorists, they're really trigger happy. Yeah. And and so I included, you know, parts of the transcript. It's really completely representative.
In one case, one of them says, I want to get the ones in the truck with the bed. For instance, it's like, oh boy, I'm ready to go on this particular operation.
Yes, they're just, you know, you hear it time and time again. They're, you know, waiting to, you know, engage, and yeah, it's really, it's what I think can be best described as being trigger happy.
Right. Did you utilize the Freedom of Information Act to get the actual footage? It's for such a secret operation. I mean, all of a sudden, this very graphic material shows up in your film.
Well, it is a reenactment based on this real transcript, and so there's we had actors read the verbatim script, and then we also reenacted the video based on a lot of information that I had, which the military file included screenshots, included even, you know, very graphic photographs of the cars, you know, like the maps of, you know, where all of this was taking place. I did use the Freedom of Information Act request to get the original footage. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was following up, but we, you know, the government wouldn't release it to us. But the way we recreated it, I've spoken to many people who have been in the audience, you know, many veterans, and they have said it looks very realistic.
Well, it certainly did to me. I mean, I'm really quite surprised to hear that this was a reenactment. It looked certainly otherwise.
Many, many people who have seen the real footage like that have said it looks really real.
We have all seen from time to time on television scenes of drone strikes. Is what we are seeing on television then probably a reenactment because the government is not giving this stuff up?
Do you mean like footage we often, I mean, it's used, like drones are used now a lot as a method in like movies and films, or do you actually mean?
In news programs, we've seen things that are purported to be shots of actual strikes and targeting.
Well, it always happens that the government also leaks information, you know, when it's... Well,
we're hearing a lot about that lately, that's for sure.
When it's in the interest of the government to make a point or prove something, it has, you know, happened time and time again that information is being leaked from the government. Mm.
Let's talk for a moment, the couple of minutes that we have remaining, about Daniel. We haven't done more than just mention his name once or twice. He's in kind of a unique position, isn't he? What is his story with regard to allegations of espionage?
Well, what happens during the production of the film is that Daniel gets raided by the FBI and is being investigated for espionage. And the problem with Espionage Act investigations is that you don't get information. It's, you know, because everything is secret. You know, even if you have a lawyer, and Daniel has lawyers, attorneys, and one of them is Jessen Radak, who's a whistleblower attorney. She also represents Edward Snowden, for example. So she is really, I think, one of the best people in her field. But even with her support and her help, it's really, you know, nearly impossible to get any information of what's going on.
And specific charges against him or what?
No, he has not been charged. So he's, as far as we know, he's only being investigated. And as far as we know, it could also, you know, the investigation could be closed at this point. So that's kind of what is so disturbing too, and that's what we see. That's kind of what Daniel's storyline is in the film. So, you know, he becomes, you know, part of this government investigation, and it has a strong impact on him because he doesn't know what's going on. You know, he could be, you know, arrested any day, but nothing happens. But he knows that he's probably being under surveillance and observance. You know, all of his communications monitored. So he feels he can't even, you know, build up personal relationships with people or maintain relationships because all of his communication is most likely compromised. So that means everyone else's communication who he's in contact with is compromised. So it really puts him under a lot of, you know, distress and not knowing what is going on.
Again, the point is made in your film quite clearly, I think, that the Air Force didn't seem to care very much that some of the people that came out of this program were damaged goods, if I can put it that way. Heather comes to mind immediately as one who's been struggling ever since.
Yes. I mean, fortunately now she has been able to get access to care. And it took a really, really long time. And I think her story is important because, you know, we all hope it's going to encourage people who are struggling to get help because there are people who, you know, have been in the program and veterans who, you know, are really going through very hard times or even going as far as committing suicide. So, you know, I think they really need help and we want to encourage them to get help.
Our time is winding down, but just a final question. How did making this film change you or did it?
So for me, you know, the most impactful trip, of course, was to Afghanistan because we were talking to the victims and the survivors and also just being, you know, in a war zone where, you know, we probably had drones flying above our heads. But I also, I don't have a narration in the film because I think a lot of issues like drones also are not black and white. Mm. There are a lot of, you know, gray areas. Drones can be used for search and rescue operations. They can be used for overwatch, for ground troops, where, you know, it makes a lot of sense. It makes strategic sense. So I don't have a very, you know, clear-cut opinion about the use of drones. But I think what the film is showing is a very problematic use of drones and the lack of rules and regulation.
Well, maybe your film will help change things, get people talking about it and come up with some sort of reasonable method for using these things, which can be used for good. As you've pointed out, they can find victims in earthquakes and floods and that sort of thing. There are certainly beneficial uses for this technology. Yeah.
What we have been seeing, and I hope, you know, that the film has contributed to that, is that I think the military has become more aware of the issue of PTSD within the drone program. Mm. So it's, you know, I think more people are trying to get help and the military is trying to, you know, provide more help. And I think, you know, that's something really, you know, kind of good that has been come out.
Well, congratulations to you for the film. It's really quite a job that you've done and something people should see. I can point out here that the film will be shown for the first time on May 1st at 10 p.m. on 9 PBS, the 9 Network here in St. Louis. Folks should look forward to seeing it. It's quite a project. Thank you.
Thank you.
This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.